All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am joined by the Falcoholics, Kevin Knight. We're going to be recapping the Falcons Week 2 win over the Carolina Panthers.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many, many years at FalcFans.com. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I am joined by the Falcoholics, Kevin Knight. We've had him as a frequent guest on this podcast over the last few years, and he is also the host of his own pseudo live podcast show, whatever you want to call it, called the Falcoholic Live, which comes at you, what, now twice a week, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, so we do Wednesday nights, and then after the game, whatever night of the week that is.
So there you have it, guys. Check that out. Usually at, you know, 8, 10 Wednesdays, and then, you know, whenever Sunday the game ends, right?
Yeah, or if it's like Thursday, that last Thursday night game, and it was like 1 a.m., but, you know, ideally we're not going to get that again, but
yes.
It'll be earlier in the day, hopefully.
Man, it's primetime games. Other people get hyped for them, but when you have to cover the game, it's like, ah, gosh. Sundays at 1 are perfect every single time. But with that being said, this was a Sunday at 1 game, and the Falcons won 31-24. Things got a little hairy towards the end, but for the most part, the Falcons were in control of this game, particularly in the second half, for most of the second half, second and third quarters. With a strong finish to the first half, one of the few instances that I noted on yesterday's Rapid Reaction show, one of the few instances where the Falcons sort of in the two-minute offense have driven down the field and scored a touchdown in the Steve Sarkisian era. But the main thing with the Falcons' offensive performance is that this was a little bit of a rebound game. This was a little bit of a redemption game for not only Steve Sarkisian, but also for Matt Ryan, as well as the offensive line, from a not-so-stellar performance from all three of those entities in Week 1. Kevin, what are your thoughts on sort of redemption season being at hand?
Well, I mean, I knew after Week 1 that the takes were going to be hot, you know, and they were. They were blazing, and the Falcons honestly weren't. We kind of got spared from the national attention in a lot of ways by all the craziness that happened last weekend. But, you know, this week I think also maybe is not 100% what we'll see on a week-to-week basis, but it's much closer to, I think, what the team is going to be week in and week out than that Week 1 game. And, you know, on offense, you know, Sark is, as much as we like to, you know, as much as we like to slander Sark on a daily basis, you know, I think that he showed some improvement this season, even in Week 1 with, you know, being more willing to utilize Tevin Coleman in the passing game and generally spreading the ball around a bit more. You know, in Week 1, we saw the bad Steve Sarkisian. And in Week 2, we see, oh, this is what Steve Sarkisian can do if he's comfortable, if the team is rolling. But, you know, defense, Duke Riley is struggling. So we'll see. We'll see if he can get it together. You know, I'm kind of already ready for Foye Oluokun to step in. I think Oluokun's looked like he deserves a shot to see if he can be better at least. Not that there's a guarantee there, but Duke was just really – I think Duke has some sort of confidence issue, and it's sad to see for a player with that much talent, you know, to be struggling with more of the mental aspect of the game. But, you know, I'm not giving up on Duke completely. I think, you know, he still has a ton of talent, and, you know, this really is only his – what, second season, third season?
Second, yeah.
Yeah, second.
And he only really played six games last year, so this is like his eighth game.
Yeah. So, you know, we should give Duke Riley a break. You know, if all he ever turns into is like a solid backup, like your fourth or fifth linebacker, that's not honestly a terrible, you know, return on a third-round pick. I think people like to consider a third-round pick like they do a first- and a second-round pick because it's early in the draft, but the hit rate on the third-round pick falls off big time from the first-round pick especially, and then, you know, the second-round pick too. So, you know, if you get a player that's going to make your roster every year and hopefully contribute on special teams and provide depth, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I know everyone expected, you know, Duke Riley, like a lot of our draft picks in the Dan Quinn era, to just all of a sudden turn into this great player, even though they weren't drafted, you know, early at all. In the so I preach patience still. I think we'll know more after these first four games about the offense specifically, and just got to tread water until Deion Jones gets back, really.
Yeah. I do want to circle back to the Sark thing, but you just couldn't hold out to get your Foye Oluokunhive takes out there, Kevin,
yes,
on the show as soon as
I
possible.
Warned you.
Yes, you did. You did warn me ahead of time. I was like, okay, well, we'll get to that like 10 minutes into the show, but I guess we'll get into it 2 minutes in. we'll circle back to the Sark thing in a second. You're just ruining the show, Kevin, sabotaging.
Yep, blowing it all up.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, I think, you know, with Duke, you know, what he needs is time, and we'll see if he gets there. And your point about sort of not having, you know, him being a backup. When you look at linebackers in particular that aren't drafted in the first two rounds of the draft, the hit rate sort of really does fall off of a cliff after round two. So, you know, at face value, you would want to get more out of a third round pick than a capable backup if that's what Duke Riley winds up being. But, you know, relative to his positional group, like, that's not as bad a return on investment. And to be fair to him, you know, Stephen Nicholas, the player I've compared him to in the past, is like, wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire his first couple of years in the NFL. And then, you know, he wound up being like a 4 or 5 year starter for the Falcons and was a competent guy. Not, you know, when you put him in man coverage against tight ends, you know, that was a different story. But for the most part, he did his job and was a valuable piece on special teams. And I think that's still certainly a possibility for Duke Riley long term, but we'll have to sort of see how he develops. And I think, you know, for the short term, I agree. I think getting Olakun more snaps in the nickel, I think, will be beneficial. Because I think really at this point for both of these guys, they're too young and too green to really sort of definitively say, okay, this is what this guy is. This guy should play or this guy shouldn't play. They both need reps. And so we didn't see a ton of Olakun this past week against Carolina in the nickel. We didn't see a ton of him in the base defense, but I think, you know, as he gets further along, we can see a sort of more of an expanded role, and we'll get an opportunity to see whether or not he takes to that role or if, you know, Duke Riley continues to be the team's best option in the absence of Deion Jones moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if it means anything or if Duke Riley needed a breather or whatnot, but, you know, the Falcons took Duke Riley off the field in that last drive. And not that last drive was anything that we should replicate other than the fact that we actually didn't let them score the touchdown.
Yes.
But they got extremely close.
Extremely close.
So, the mood was very tense in the press box. I could, you know, you just hear people taking deep breaths all the time. So you know it's tense when these seasoned veterans are, you know, sweating it out. But well, it wouldn't be a Falcons game otherwise. But, you know, I think that, you know, that may or may not mean anything long term. But the fact that the team put him in there in that last drive when they really, really need to stop. I don't know. To me, I think there's something to that, whether that's Foye is going to split snaps with Riley now or Foye just outright takes over. I don't know, but I do think that, you know, he is closing in quickly at least.
Yeah, I agree. And with that said, we will eventually circle our way back to Steve Sarkisian and some other topics about this game.
It's amazing, right? He's not like our number one, you know, we need to complain about him for 15 minutes topic on this week's show.
Yes, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there at some point this season, but probably not on this episode. But you guys know that ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and often it is betting advice. But the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. And if you do think you know, then you got to check out my bookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're the best bet you'll make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I wouldn't recommend a service to my listeners that hasn't been good to me, and that's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, over and unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MYBOOKIE. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON25 and hold out to make your deposit after 7 p.m. to get that extra $25 free play with that promo code. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay, Kevin, let's talk about Steve Sarkisian. And I should note that I didn't say this at the top of the show because I honestly forgot until you just mentioned it. This is the problem with, you know, doing these podcasts, everything blurs together. But you were at this game, covering this game. You were in the press box. So that, you know, you have official status as you know, the insider, can give the inside scoop on this game. But let's, you know, you mentioned sort of Sark and talking about how often we've slandered him. And I think this game was a good performance for him. And as I mentioned earlier, Matt Ryan in the offensive line. But I should also point out that, you know, the Falcons got off to a rocky start under Sark last season in week one against the Bears, and then blew the doors off of the Packers in the second week, and then did a good job in week three, and then sort of fell by the wayside after that. So I don't necessarily know this performance is enough to say that, okay, the Sark issue is a non-issue moving forward, because we've done this song and dance before. But I think you're right in terms of there were a lot of promising things to see from Sark and this Falcons offense from this past week, particularly given that the three specific entities that had seemingly struggled the most in week one, which were Sark, Matt Ryan, and the offensive line, all came back and had really strong performances this past week. So I think that's a good sign to see that maybe this offense is poised to sort of pick up some of the slack lost from the Falcons defense, given some of the injuries that they're facing currently.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of, you know, scoring 30 plus points. That's nice. It feels like forever since the Falcons have done that, but I mean, it hasn't been that long. It's just, you know, we get so used to it with Shanahan here. We got spoiled, so I'm enjoying the scoring again. But you know, it was always a hot take to react as strongly as we did to week one. It's probably equally as hot to say, oh, well, this is the Falcons offense now, so we're going to score 30 plus points, no problem. So don't do that. Don't do that either. But Matt Ryan had like one of his worst games since 2011 statistically last week. So that should tell you how rare it is for Ryan to actually play that poorly in a game, which is why I tweeted out last week, you know, don't expect Ryan to like play this badly all year. That's not going to happen. He's shown us, you know, what, 6-7 years now of competent quarterbacking week in and week out. So, no, I don't think the apocalypse is happening, you know, because he had a bad game in week one. So, all that being said, Sark did look a little more comfortable. The team really benefited, I think, from some good calls and Calvin Ridley kind of settling into the offense. Those crossers, man, oh my goodness, those were beautiful. You know, you can really see that's a route that Calvin Ridley can win on consistently, particularly, you know, against teams like Carolina, who might not have the most talented secondaries. I was impressed with a lot of stuff with Sark. The one thing, I only have one real criticism, and that's his play calling in short yard situations. You know, you see that 10, 11 man box and he's like, we're still running it. And, you know, you see how unlikely the Falcons are to win in that situation, because they're not an offense that's built to run the ball there. They're an offense that's built to spread you out and attack you with, you know, their entire arsenal of weapons, which is extensive based on what we've seen in this game. So it is the kind of stubbornness and conservative play calling of just constantly in short yardage situations, just continuing to try to pound the rock into an 11-man box. It's just, that play's not going to work. You need to try some other creative plays there. You could just line up in your regular offense and try to win that way. You know, I'm just saying, three tight end sets would be nice. You know, they were really effective with those during this game. So just a little more creativity there. But, you know, we saw that they seemed to fix those red zone issues this week. I mean, they're 4-for-4. So positive signs. Hopefully more of this and less of week one going forward.
Yeah. I think you're right there. I think you mentioned it, like Matt Ryan's having a rebound game, I think was expected. Like, it's just like of those things that I was sort of expecting going into the week, I was like, oh yeah, Matt Ryan will be fine this week. But the other thing, Sark, the offensive line going up against a formidable Panthers front, I have questions. I certainly wasn't necessarily confident without Devontae Freeman going into this game, just because Freeman has had a little bit more success going against the Panthers as of late than Tevin Coleman has. But Coleman and Ito Smith both played outstanding in this game, and the offensive line played outstanding, kept Matt Ryan pretty much clean throughout the game, in spite of the injury to Andy Levitre, with Wes Schweitzer stepping in and performing reasonably well, considering that he was being asked to play against guys like Kawhan Short and Dontari Poe. So I think, you know, the Falcons offense deserves a ton of credit. You know, any criticisms are mostly nitpicks at this point, based off of this performance. I'm sure, as I said earlier, we will have plenty of opportunities to have legitimate criticisms of this offense moving forward, because I'm not necessarily expecting it to be as it was on Sunday for every single game moving forward. And certainly, yeah, you're right, the short yardage, maybe, you know, convert one of those first downs on those last two drives, and maybe we wouldn't have gotten into that situation late in the game. But, you know, it is what it is. The Falcons are always going to falcon in some form or fashion. Well, guys, we got a little bit more to say about this game, but isn't it crazy how much we pay for new, brand new name clothes? Why do we buy new kids' clothes if they just outgrow them in a few months? Wouldn't it be great if there was a place to discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes? There is. It's swap.com, the world's largest online and consignment thrift store. Stop driving to store after store, sifting through racks, and easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on swap.com with easy-to-use filters to find just what you need. With swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Lululemon, Carter's, Nike, J.Crew, and Gap. Quality, hand-inspected items are added daily, and if something doesn't fit, you guys can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. We have a special offer for our listeners. Get 35% off select items for your first order with the promo code LOCKEDON. Plus, find new deals every day on swap.com's homepage. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to get 35% off select items with your first order. Visit the world's largest online and consignment thrift store today. That's swap.com. But do you have any other thoughts about the offensive performance before we move on and turn our attention back to the defense a little bit?
I mean, like you said, the offensive line looks good. I actually met Brandon Fusco's parents, not Fusco. I officially know now that's how you pronounce it. I met his parents and his college coach on the sideline before the game, and they were talking about, you know, how excited he was to be here and stuff like that. But I thought Fusco played really well. And Wes Schweitzer, too, coming in for Andy Levitre, who left relatively early in this game with his elbow injury. Schweitzer came in and looked fine. Like, I thought he looked good throughout the game. And, you know, that's a far cry from what we saw from him through much of last season. And like you said, the Panthers D-line are no slouches. I mean, that's probably – if Thomas Davis is there, I guess you could say the linebacking corps is probably their strongest group. But if the defensive line is not the strongest, it's the second strongest on that entire team. So they're a quality group of guys, and I thought Schweitzer and Fusco really solidified a spot there that, you know, after we lost Levitre last year, this offense went in the toilet. And I think, you know, it looks like if we have Schweitzer playing at more of a capable starter level as opposed to a tick above a backup, I think that will help this offense stay more consistent than they were throughout much of last season.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, credit to Jake Matthews, because I also sort of was not high on his prospects because he's had a number of sort of struggling games against Mario Addison. And Addison was mostly, you know, a non-factor in this game. So, you know, and even Short did not have a sort of monster performance. So that's a credit to not only Fusco out of the great college of Slippery Rock. And
Slippery Rock shout out.
Yeah. And with the D tackles that they have with Poe in the mix and to have Mac and all those guys on the interior and take care of business, I think is a positive sign for this offensive line. And because one of the questions I had after last week was, after the struggles that they had, even arguably more than they had in the playoff game, at the end of last season, did maybe the possibility that our older offensive line with four of the starters being on the wrong side of 30, maybe they were hitting, you know, that old man wall that inevitably every offensive lineman hits. But it's good to see that against a quality defensive line that they were able to bounce back and sort of, at least for the next week or so, throw that narrative out the window. So that gives me positivity that moving forward, that they will be able to, you know, keep that train a moving.
Yeah, and we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss the running backs at all, because Tevin Coleman put on a show. I mean, he was explosive. I thought his balance looked so much better than it has in years past. I mean, he was just, every time he touched the ball, he was killing him. So just awesome to see that from Tevin Coleman. And then Ito Smith, too. He made some nasty cuts. I mean, he was very impressive. So it's amazing what players look like when they're not behind a bunch of scrubs on the O-line, right?
Yes, yes. And, yeah, I think that's another point that Sark deserves credit for, not necessarily with the good blocking and the good running, but the fact that he basically was like, we're not running into the teeth of that Panthers defense, and I'm confident our guys can run to the outside. And your beloved toss play seemed to work pretty effectively throughout the game when they were attacking the Panthers' edges. I am curious sort of when I watch the film later whether or not, you know, having a guy like Thomas Davis on the field maybe would have helped the Panthers a little bit in that regard. But the Falcons found effectiveness, you know, basically didn't, you know, until I think that last third and one, they didn't run into the teeth of that Panthers defense pretty much at all the entire game. So I think that was smart scheming on Sark's end. And also, obviously, you got to give credit for the blocking and the running backs as well to go out there and execute.
Yeah, because I thought that makes a big difference for a player like Tevin Coleman, who, like, if he gets contact, you know, at the line of scrimmage, he's probably not going to get that many yards, and that's not necessarily bad. You know, he'll still get you a couple, but that's not his game. But if you can spring Tevin Coleman and just help him get past the defensive line, like, that man, it takes like three steps for him to get to full speed. And I mean, we saw it firsthand. I mean, if the Panthers didn't have Dante Jackson, who runs like a 4.2 something, that man would have been gone for probably multiple long touchdowns. So that speed is a real weapon if you have the blocking to get him out in space. And it looks like maybe the Falcons do have that this year.
Yes. And look, that juke he put on Dante Jackson, you know, for the last 3 years, that would have been him tripping over his own feet. And I think one of the things that Coleman has shown, even though we didn't get to see a ton of his work during the preseason, I thought he did a good job being a little bit more balanced, a little bit more patient, because it seemed like one of the knocks on Coleman over the last couple of years has always been he just gets the ball and he just accelerates to, you know, 110 miles per hour and then winds up, you know, losing his feet. And that sort of one of the things that seems to have changed going back to the preseason and was certainly on display this past Sunday was the fact that he's running with a little bit more balance. He's not necessarily accelerating from 0 to 60 immediately upon receiving the ball and sort of letting things develop. And you know, you're seeing the footwork and the improved footwork. And it probably took a little bit longer than I think a lot of people wanted it to take, but it's now occurring to the point that now everybody just seems to basically have written off Devontae Freeman. And if Ito Smith has another good game in Freeman's absence, then I think people will be like, well, why are we keeping Tevin Coleman? Why don't we just trade him for a first-round pick and just make Ito Smith the starter? Which, to me, is ridiculous how, you know, I guess it is, what have you done for me lately? And I guess because
right.
Devontae Freeman, you know, it's been a while since he had a 100-yard rushing game. All of a sudden, he's a worthless running back that's, you know, this anchor on the Falcons cap situation and whatnot. But it is what it is with fans and whatnot.
Well, at this point, I mean, say you had to choose, you know, one way or another right now, who would you rather have locked up to like a 4-year contract if you signed today, Tevin Coleman or Devonta Freeman?
Is he going to make me make this decision? Look, I still...
I can go first if you want, I mean, but...
I would... I feel like that, you know, I feel like, you know, this is me talking around the, I will answer the question, but I want to talk around it for a second. I feel like you don't have to make that choice.
No, they don't.
I want to stress that. But today, I would still take Devontae, but, you know, there's still 14 more games to be played, so I might change my answer by the end of the year, but I don't think I will.
Yeah. And I think people, you know, like you said, they do underestimate Devontae when he's not on the field, especially when Tevin Coleman looks so good. But, you know, based on Freeman's recent injury history, if I had to choose right now, I would probably go with Coleman. It would be a really hard decision, but I just think, you know, your best ability is availability, and they're close enough, particularly with Coleman looking very impressive to start the season, that would be where I would go there. But, you know, I wouldn't argue with anyone that said they'd want to keep Freeman because he's, you know, he's very good as well. But, yeah, I mean, basically, and I've tried to explain this to some people, and some other people don't seem to get it, but the Falcons can't get out of Devonta Freeman's contract until 2020. Like, there's no options there unless they just want to eat a lot of dead cap, which I don't think is fiscally responsible. So I don't think they're going to do that. But, you know, 2020 is basically when they have to decide one way or the other. If they can, you know, but this year, like, they're going to keep Freeman next year, probably no matter what. But if they decide at the end of this season that they want Tevin Coleman, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they give him a big contract, but push the cap into 2020 and then move on from Freeman then, whether that's via trade or via cut, because his you know, dead cap is manageable at that point. But people are saying, you know, 2019, what are we doing? Well, it's like, well, if they re-sign Tevin Coleman, and I think there's a good chance that they do, then it probably means that Freeman's gone in 2020. But that would give this team another, you know, another year of this running back duo as well, which is also not a bad thing.
Yes, yes. It's a pet peeve of mine that when the Falcons get two good players at a position, people automatically then want to reduce it down to one and be like, who's better? And let's throw away one of these guys. You know, the point I will say on that is I do think the Falcons do have some flexibility to keep both guys and pay Coleman after the season. And what if that lasts into 2020 or 2021, then so be it. But again, I think the Falcons are really at a point where they'll just sort of play it by ear. And, you know, well, again, there's still a lot of season left to be played, and that will determine sort of what their future at the running back position is going to be. But yeah, they have some flexibility in that regard, because, you know, it's not as if every veteran player right now is necessarily going to stick around, and so they can wind up cutting a certain wide receiver that happens to be the greatest quarterback in NFL history to create some cap space if need be. But they don't even necessarily have to do that. That's, I don't know. That's a 2019 conversation.
Right. We're maybe just slightly early on talking about 2019 roster construction, but yeah, you know.
Basically the point I was trying to make earlier is there's a lot of unknowns right now before we get to fall one way or the other too much of talking about 2019 decisions, but
yes. Sure. Someone somewhere is yelling nerd, so that's okay. We embrace it.
All right, Kevin. Final thoughts on this game. We talked about Duke Riley. Do you want to talk about Dirty Demonte Casey and his ejection and the hit?
Yeah, I mean, it was 100% ejection worthy. The NFL did come out and clarify that it was not an ejection for a helmet-to-helmet hit. Which is part of the reason why I think it was Rappaport today that reported that he's not expected to receive a suspension. And to be honest, I don't think he should have. I mean, if Cam had really gotten seriously injured, I could have seen them giving him a big suspension just because of the outcome. But as much as we say it shouldn't matter, Cam got up and was fine after a minute or two. So that, as much as whether or not that's, you know, logical, you know, who knows with the NFL. But that's probably part of why they're not going to suspend him. But one thing is, you know, easy to see is that the Falcons cannot lose another safety because Jordan Richards is not good. You know, I thought he played like he was serviceable in small doses, but I don't think he can start for you for more than a game without enemies, without your you know, your opponents going after him over and over and over again. So, you know, Demonte Casey, let's clean it up a little bit. Let's not, you know, slam into quarterbacks when they're sliding. Let's just do a little bit better than that, but still very excited about his potential at safety. And I think the Falcons secondary is what's going to have to carry that defense going forward.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I thought they were the more impressive group in Sunday's game. The pass rush was a little lackluster. Rewatching the game today, they were a little bit better than they seemed live watching them, but still not the sort of dominant performance that I think a lot of us were hoping for, given so many injuries at the Panthers and fresh faces in the starting lineup that the Panthers had on their offensive line. I thought Grady Jarrett definitely performed well. It was a little underwhelmed with Vic Beasley and Tack McKinley. They weren't non-factors by any means, but I didn't think they necessarily had the sort of, you know, I know Tack's got injured late in the game with a growing injury, and we'll find out more about his status in the coming days. But I, you know, going up against Chris Clark, I think he should have done a lot more than what he did. But
yes,
it is what it is. Well, you know, this pass rush, I think, was always going to be the biggest question mark going into the season, even in light of some of these injuries. And I think it's put more pressure on this pass rush to sort of have to carry a little bit more of the weight just because they won't have that, you know, outstanding back seven with Jones and Neal out to rely on, as they have, I think, for the most part over the last couple of years. But what were your thoughts sort of on the play of the front line guys?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Sanat didn't get that many snaps, which confused me because I thought he played really well last week. They gave Terrell McClain a lot of snaps, and McClain's fine, but I think Sanat offers you a lot more overall. So I would have liked to see Sanat more. But other than that, I mean, Grady Jarrett obviously had a great game. And the pass rush seemed, I think, like you said, more underwhelming than it really was. And part of that's like, people, it's Cam Newton they're trying to tackle, okay? This man is like a defensive end. He's like the same size as these players. Like, and he's a great running quarterback. Like, you can't just go flying off back into the backfield without paying attention to what he's doing, because if you do that, he's going to run for 30 yards. So it's hard to get a ton of pressure on a player like Cam Newton unless you have really good linebackers or like a really elite pass rushers. And with Deion Jones out, I mean, the Falcons really don't have that anymore. You know, Campbell's fine, but he's not Deion Jones. And, you know, Ken O'Neill's also not in there, which sucks. And then Vic Beasley is basically a ghost, so that's not great either. So once Tack went out, it was basically Grady Jarrett, and they had Jack Crawford taking snaps at defensive end, which I don't think he's played that in like over a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully whatever's going on with Tack is minor. They did not even report it in the booth, his injury. So I don't know what to make of that. It makes me nervous, but we don't have any reason necessarily to suspect anything, but that hasn't stopped the Falcons from breaking my heart in the past. So we're just going to hope for the best. Please, Tack. Please, football gods.
The good thing, if there is a good thing, is that the Falcons did get Steven Means, who is a guy that I'm a big fan of. So I feel like they have, you know, a decent guy available if they need him to plug him in soon, which may seem to be the case, you know, given Shelby also got injured as well. So, you know, the injuries continue to mount up on the Falcons. We'll find out soon if any of these are serious in addition to the ones that they've already sort of been dealing with. But you know, not an underwhelming performance for the pass rush, but not necessarily a totally disastrous one. So we'll see what they can do in the future. You know, the one biggest downside of not having Deion Jones is you can't count on him to go off against the Saints as he has done the last 2 years in every game.
Right.
So someone's going to have to step up and make these ridiculous plays that Deion Jones usually makes in these games. And I don't necessarily know if Duke Riley's going to be that guy, and I think that's a little bit too much to expect out of Foye Oluokun, just because he doesn't have the sort of the I need to show off in front of my hometown team like Deion Jones does, because he's probably for some reason upset that the Saints didn't draft him or something like that, and that's why he decides to go out and do the things that he has done. But maybe he can inspire some of these young Falcon defenders to sort of step up. But Kevin, are there any additional thoughts that you want to leave us, the listeners, with before we wrap up the show?
Well, we've touched on it. I mean, just don't overreact to the game. Don't overreact to any of these really early season games. Yeah. I mean, it's tempting, and it's really easy to do because there's literally nothing else to talk about. So, of course, we're going to, like, analyze the, you know, 60 plays on offense that each team gets, you know, because those are the only 60 we've seen all season. So it's natural to do that. But just accept that you're probably not going to know what your team is until week four is over. Unless you're the Bills, I think you know what your team is at this point. If you're Bills fans, sorry guys, I don't need to see 4 weeks of that. But for everyone else, I mean, you know, we saw the Eagles struggle this week, so it's like, oh, what's going on there? We saw the Saints almost lose to the Browns. You know, Zane Gonzalez, I feel for you getting cut, buddy, but I do need you to make that kick and beat the Saints, please. And you know, it's just kind of been a really random start to the season, and Patrick Mahomes is, you know, throwing 6 touchdowns in a game, and Ryan Fitzpatrick's in the MVP conversation. So, you know, we don't really know anything yet, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes, it happens every year, but we always get caught off guard by the new craziness that happens every NFL season. Like, what, Alex Smith was hands down the MVP at this point last year. Now it's Ryan Fitzpatrick. We'll sort of see if he can sustain that this year, or Mahomes, or whatever the case may be. So, it's always craziness in the NFL. That's part of the reason why we love it so much, because you just never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates, you know? You ever heard that phrase?
I may have heard it once.
Okay. But Kevin, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter. And again, once again, plug Falcoholic Live when you can.
Yes, so you guys can find me. I'm Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin. Obviously, articles on thefalcoholic.com. And we do our show on the Falcoholic's Facebook page, which is also just facebook.com/thefalcoholic. Like Aaron said, we are on every Wednesday at 8:10 p.m. during the season. And then we also go on right after the game, good or bad. And those shows are a lot of fun. So definitely check that out sometime, guys. But yeah, I know we were gaining on Aaron recently with the followers, but I think we've kind of stalled out now. So, you know, you guys have to pick a side, you know, so we can make this a bit to help both of us get more followers. So, you know, we're gaining on the Locked On podcast. So if you guys want to help me out, you know, do that. Otherwise, you can follow Aaron because he has a great show too. So,
yes, yes. I don't ever plug following the Locked On podcast, but now people need to follow the Locked On podcast because now it's going to be a thing. And yes. I'm going to tie entirely my ego to how many people follow this podcast. So definitely follow Locked On Falcons on Twitter and whatnot. So and definitely check us out on Facebook because we don't have enough people checking us out there as well. So please, guys, you got to help me out. This is my show. You can't have Kevin coming in here and dunking on me on my show. So appreciate it, Kevin. We will certainly be talking throughout the season on Twitter and elsewhere. And I'm sure there will be probably a point in the second half of the season where I will have you back on to talk more Falcons. So I'm looking forward to more conversations, more hot takes, more cold takes, more overreactions, more underreactions, and all the things that come with every Falcons football season.
Absolutely. Thanks very much.
There you have it. Appreciate Kevin for joining us. And of course, yes, please follow Locked On Falcons on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Give us a like, Locked On Falcons. I'm on Twitter at FileFans. If you have questions or comments or suggestions or anything like that, then you can tweet me at FileFans. But if it's podcast related, just go ahead, send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle, of course. You can also email the show at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And, of course, leave a comment at FileFans.com. Tomorrow we will have a crossover pod with host of Locked On Saints, Ross Jackson. And then Thursday will be our Q&A episode where we can get into a little more of the nitty-gritty of the All-22. I know I've talked about over the last 2 weeks sort of the changing status. In the time being, that's going to be sort of my default, is sort of a more open format on Thursday. And hopefully Friday we'll be able to have a fan talk. And so if you guys have thoughts on changing that format or whatnot, then by all means, hit me up at the various platforms and addresses and handles that I just mentioned to let me know that you want to change on that. But that's going to be the default moving forward because it's just easier for me to just basically flip, you know, the Wednesday and Thursday show, which is now the Wednesday show used to be the Q&A and the Thursday show used to be the crossover, but now the Wednesday is the crossover and Thursday is the Q&A. So. All right, that's it. Until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.